Bush represents the tying run at the plate. 1-2 the count. Crowd making a lot of noise. Alvarado, the big lefty, is ready. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Got him with a cutter. And Philadelphia wins. The Phillies take the first two games of this series, winning game two tonight, 5-3 over the Cubs.
So here we sit. The worst case scenario for your Chicago Cubs, they are 13 games behind the Brewers as play starts today over on the north side. They finish their series against the Phillies. We are going to do our own pre-game in the next segment, but right now we are going to talk with Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic, who, what?
So this is Cubs pre-game.
Yes.
Sweet.
Choose me. Yes, it's that's what it is. Our pre-game segment with Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic. He does a great job covering them. In fact, such a great job that this week we spent a lot of time talking about his work on the Cubs and where things stand. And he joins us now from the ballpark, right? Are you at today's game, Sahadev, or did you get away from it?
Did I get away from it? I wish I got away from it. No, I shouldn't say that.
It's okay.
I got a day off yesterday, so I won't complain. I am here. I'm sure you could hear in the background some of the organ playing and whatnot. Going to watch some Cubs baseball. Is this the day it all turns around, right? We'll say that for every day until it's this misery ends.
Probably not. You've asked a lot of good questions, obviously, in press conferences. The piece that you did where you were talking about the Brewers and the Cubs and the juxtaposition of the two, what made you decide, let's really drill down on this as a subject?
Well, I mean, I'm guilty of it. I come into almost every season saying, like, I don't think the Brewers are very good. So, I mean, clearly I underrate them myself. And year after year, they put together a good season, a strong season. They're competing at minimum for their division. Have they gone deep in the playoffs? Not often enough, no. But, I mean, they clearly know how to put together good teams on a shoestring budget. And the Cubs are not on a shoestring budget, right? They should be doing much more than they are. And it's a little jarring to see at times just how often we see this team not maximize the talent that they believe they have. So what is that telling us? What does that mean? I think that's something they have to kind of self-reflect and look at to fully appreciate. But, I mean, I'm impressed with what the Brewers do year after year and what they've done, what they've lost over the years and continue and being able to continue to win shows that's a strong organization. We talk about Tampa Bay and Cleveland get all this love. I think it's important for us to recognize that Milwaukee deserves that same type of love of small market team, not signing all these massive contracts and then finding ways to win year after year when you have to make tough decisions like trading Josh Hader, trading Corbin Burns and losing key players, losing your, best manager in baseball and continuing to win, if not get slightly better.
Well, and with different general managers, people forget right. David Stearns isn't there anymore. He's in Queens with the Mets.
Yeah, and there are people within that organization that are really, they weren't 100% sure. They were a little concerned. Oh, man, we traded Corbin Burns. We lost Craig Counsell. David Stearns is gone. And they feel a little empowered. You know what I mean? They feel it's like that. It's not like they weren't confident that what they were doing was sound and that they had like a good process. There's just a little uncertainty, right? When you lose all that type of talent and it's not like they're saying David Stearns or Craig Counsell or Corbin Burns are no good. I think they all have a ton of respect for them, but they also believe they've built something there and they, all those people had a hand in it, right? All those people that are gone had a hand in it, but they've built something there that's sustainable that they believe it can lead to consistent success. It's what, I mean, Theo talked about when coming here at first, and it's what Jed Hoyer wants to do. They want to be able to build something that works whether the top person is there or not, whether Craig Counsell is here or not. That's what they want to build here. It hasn't happened.
It's funny, Sahadev, because we had Carter on the show last Friday, And we asked him about how it is that you could take theoretically the best manager in baseball away from the Brewers, and they're fine. And they're more than fine. They're, you know, 17 games above 500 or whatever it is. And he said, well, you know, that's the mark of a really strong organization, that you take one piece away and it doesn't crumble. And I feel like that's I don't know if Carter realized when he said it, but if you flip that around and say, well, you guys fired your manager for the best manager in baseball, and things got worse for you, does that then mean that organizationally you are not as sound as the Brewers are?
I mean, right now, you know, you have to come away with that conclusion for now, right? They need to turn this around. I can make excuses, maybe not excuses, but, like, you know, kind of explain that some of this away and say, you know, like, they're not that far off. I don't believe they're, like, miles and miles away from contention. The reality is they're 9 games under 500, so it's kind of pointless to talk about bounces here and there or how far away they are from contention. And, like, yeah, they have to look at those things and figure those things out, but they're not close right now as far as the results say on the field. There are 9 games under 500. Sure, they're in the wild card race. Everyone pretty much is in the wild card race in the NL, but just watch the product on the field. There were Phillies people that were saying, oh, they're catching the Phillies at the right time. And I said this, I said, that's not the case. When you're facing the Cubs, there's nobody that you can say they're catching them at the right time. Go look at the month of June. Go look at those teams that they were playing when they played them. They were not on the hot streaks. They weren't all, like, clicking. They played 25 straight games against teams at 500 and below, and they went 10-15. They had the opportunity to show us that they're better than what they are, and they didn't do it. They haven't come through in big situations. They played far too many close games. Something goes wrong every game, and that's just a sign that this team isn't good enough. They're missing pieces that aren't would dramatically help them. I mean, look at the team they're playing this series. It's 2, 3, 4 guys on the shelf, I think, that are, like, if the Cubs lost that type of talent from their team, they would not be able to win. And the Phillies are, you know, I think they split a series with the Marlins before coming here, but they're not having much trouble with the Cubs. Trey Turner is still there and playing at an MVP level. Schwarber and Harper may be on the shelf, but, like, these guys, I mean, this is an organization that looked like a mess 4 years ago and now has the best record in baseball and has made, what is it, 2 straight NLCS, and looks like they're the class of the NL this year?
There are 3 guys on the injured list for the Phillies that would be the best offensive player for the Cubs.
Bingo.
I mean, that says so much, and I understand the idea of, like, being cautious and intelligent spending. I understand it. I think there is some validity to some of these ideas, and you look at the length of some of these deals of Trey Turner and Bryce Harper, and I can understand getting queasy of thinking about 2030 or whatever, but right now, you know, I want to talk about now. You know, that's what I want to live in the present, and how do you provide your fan base and everyone with a entertaining and winning product? The Phillies have done that. The Cubs haven't. So that's the bottom line. You know, we can talk about intelligent spending versus spending, you know, stupid money. It's like one is working, one isn't at right now. I'm not saying that the Cubs can never win, that they don't have good, like, players coming up. I believe there's talent here, and they should be playing better. The fact of the matter is they're not. They're not playing better. They're not playing good enough. Nobody would argue that they're doing enough right now, and it's really hard to watch because this has gone to a point that I did not expect. Yeah, there's bumps in the road every season for any team, right? And I thought maybe, like, May was that. You do it for another month, it's hard to make excuses for it or expect it to turn around. This has been bad baseball for far too long.
Well, and I appreciated even the article that you had recently on The Athletic, Sadev, talking about that concept. I think we don't talk enough about intelligent spending, for example, but when the headline is, with the Phillies in town, Cubs see what paying for star talent can do, you're not just indicting the Cubs there for paying for a few people. You're also illustrating that point that you've got to pay for a lot of people in order to have a few maybe hit year to year.
Yeah, no, I absolutely think that's the case. I think, you know, one thing, like, you know, Cleveland developed a star, right, in Jose Ramirez. That's great for them. He's stayed there for a long time and taken less money. That's an ideal scenario for a small market team. It looked like the Christian Yelich deal was going to be an albatross for the Brewers. He's bounced back and looks like an MVP-type player again. That's huge for small market teams. Well, the Cubs aren't a small market team, and they haven't developed a superstar with this group of talent. So you have to go out and get that guy. You have to be bold. You have to take advantage of those moments when they come up. They have not. Like, and you can say, listen, last winter wasn't the time. They weren't going to get Shohei Ohtani. They couldn't give up what the Padres wanted for Juan Soto. Sure, if you want to make that argument, I'll listen to it. Okay, but there have been opportunities over the past 5 years to go get a star, and they didn't, and it was always the wrong time. So eventually, the time has to be now. And I wrote that 2 years ago. Like, I get, you know, I get going after Dansby Swanson. I understand intelligent spending, but every once in a while, you have to say, like, yeah, maybe this isn't the year that they compete, but you still have to go, this guy's available right now. He's not going to be available again, and we don't know what type of stars will be available at what point. Rafael Devers would have been a perfect fit for this team. He never hit free agency. He didn't make it to free agency. So now you missed out on that opportunity, and were you planning to go after him, and you missed out on someone else? So you can't wait for people to hit free agency and have plans for the future when there's someone in front of you right now. And when you back yourself into a corner now, like where they are now, so what happens next offseason? Do they overspend to go get that star that they don't really, that they aren't in love with, but now you back yourself into a corner and you're trying to force things? That's what they may be faced with. They're lucky to have, I shouldn't say lucky because they built it. They did a good job. They've developed a lot of talent, and they have a strong farm system that can't just be used to play at Wrigley Field. Like, some of that needs to be used to go get players that may be available. You need to find that opportunity. Teams do this. Mookie Betts was available by a trade, right? Juan Soto was available by a trade. You have to find that opportunity and pounce. It cannot be waiting for that opportunity to come to you. You have to go make it happen.
Sahadev, I don't mean to sound like Terrence Howard explaining math, but when you talk to Cubs management, they do talk about a run is a run is a run. And logically, that makes a ton of sense. I'm wondering, though, should slug be weighed more than defensive runs saved when you're trying to build a team?
So, yeah, I don't know if it should be weighed more, but I think when you're building a team, you have to look at your deficiencies, right? You have to look, like, it's not all in a bad, we dealt with this with the previous good Cubs team, right? The last good Cubs team, how much time did we spend talking about, like, why isn't this team performing offensively like they should, right? And we understood they had too many. We eventually came to the conclusion they have too many similar types of hitters who can be attacked in the same way, right? So those players now, I mean, they're all spread out and they're in bad parts of their career, right? Outside of Kyle Schwarber, it seems like a lot of those guys have fallen off. But I think individually, at those times, they were good players. Together, they didn't work, right? So you can look at this team and say, like, individually, there's a lot of good players. Where's the slugger? Where's the guy that's going to put up the three-run homer that you can consistently count on for 30-plus home runs? You don't really have that guy, right? So I get what you're saying, like, weighing defensive run, defense versus power versus batting average, whatever it is, right? I think you have to weigh it on your team. What's the priority for this team? And I'll give them a break and say they took a chance on that when weighing DRS, if you want to look at that defensive stat versus slug, and they put Christopher Morel at third base. It hasn't paid off because I haven't watched the players put up bad numbers but have great at bats.
It's unbelievable.
And now what we've seen is the real cold stretch, right? he never got rewarded for the hot stretch he was in because he was just tattooing the ball and it wasn't finding holes.
The Babbitt gods were killing Christopher Morel.
Yeah. And that's not happening anymore. Right now, this is just a slump, right? You hope it's a slump. He's just not playing very well right now. He's not coming through. I'm not seeing as much hard contact. The defense isn't, you know, this massive issue right now, at least. It pops up every now and then where you're like, oof, that's not playable. That's an instance where I look at it as like they tried to do it. It didn't pay off. And it's costing them big time, like in so many different ways. I mean, we were just talking about this. I was talking about this with some other reporters. Like, I don't know. Like, are we magnifying these little things that are going wrong, like the pass balls, the catcher's interference, the base running mistakes? Are they more than other teams, or are they magnified because this team plays way too many close games? I'd like to really dig into that and see. Obviously, they lead the league in outs on the bases. Sometimes that can be a huge stat, but you watch this team and you know that there are mistakes being made almost on a daily basis. It feels like it's so many times it costs them runs, and it's just like you cannot do that. You're not a good enough team to give the opposition those runs.
No, I agree. I think that's something that we have seen. But it's I typically think, Sahadev, that it's magnified because we don't have enough offense to discuss and they don't have enough offense to get them out of this. Like, if you hit your way out of it, you're not talking about that stuff. Like, for example, if the Cubs had, frankly, a different scenario against the Giants, that Jorge Soler double that we talk about that could have been a home run, you know, those are the differences I think like other teams might have, or it's just one example of something changing an outcome that isn't maybe a defensive miscue, but still illustrates the same idea.
Yeah, the margins are too slim, right?
Right.
When you're not, and it's not like Jed Hoyer said this last year. We talked to him about this. Good teams blow other teams out. How do you do that? Hit home runs. So he knows what's missing. I think he had hoped that Morel and Seiya Suzuki would take steps forward. Seiya's kind of is who he is, I guess. Like, not a bad player, right? I'm kind of, the defense is jarring, to be frank. Like, I did not expect that to be as much of an issue as it is. I think the offense isn't superstar level, but it's well above average, where he's a nice player. Morel, like we talked about, just isn't hitting. There's just not, like, they know what they need. They know what's missing from this offense. I don't know how you go and get it. It's going to be hard to do it now. And maybe, and obviously, you know, they're not in the situation where we're talking about, you know, aggressively accumulating win now talent at this deadline. So I think selling purely for the future is really hard to kind of sell to the fan base and everyone in this city. Like, I don't think that is going to go over well, but you kind of have to, I mean, Jed said it, you have to look at reality and you can't live in a fantasy world about where you are in the standings.
Sahadev, man, thank you so much for the great coverage all season long, particularly this last week. It's been terrific. And thanks for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy your fourth. Take care.
That's Sahadev Sharma.
Or try to.
Yeah, do your best. Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic. Baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Plus, we've got the Cubs and the Phillies wrapping up their series at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage starts in about 20 minutes.
No, it doesn't. We have pre-game coverage starting up like right now.
Oh, well, But this is the official pre-game.
Oh.
At 12:45 with first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. We are both big fans of Southwest.
I just flew them last week.
I plan on flying them to go to SEC Media Days.
Make that a clean sweep.
See? We love you, Southwest.
Don't go changing.
Don't you go changing. We will hear from Tommy Hotovy because Craig Counsell, we don't have the Craig Counsell today, or Craig Counsell didn't talk or something. So Tommy Hotovy is what we got, right, Alex? Great.
Tommy Hotovy talks baseball with you.
Hua! Hua!
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com.
It's our job to make breaks, and when we're not doing that enough, so you know we got to make plays. You got to make plays to win games, and that's part of winning. And in the eighth inning, we couldn't make a play. We couldn't fortunately make a pitch, and they get runs on the board.
Oh, I love that, Alex. What a nice way to end our show today.
Good throwback by you. The Cubs are getting ready to take on the Phillies. They desperately need a win, so we will see if the Cubs can get it as they sit at the bottom of the National League Central.
Meanwhile, the Phillies have 57 wins.
They sure do. Part of the reason that the Cubs are where they're at, not all of it, not an excuse for it, but is their injuries to their pitching staff and not being able to sew up high leverage situations. Tommy Hotovy talked with the assembled media about all of that and kind of gave you an update on where things stand.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, anytime you lose guys that you kind of envision pitching high leverage situations throughout the year, you know, you're going to have guys have to step up. And some of those are veteran guys that you know, get opportunities to compete, and other ones are young guys that are getting a chance for the first time to kind of show what they can feature. And I think it's been fun to watch some of the guys like Luke Little and Porter Hodge really take the next step in my mind, like getting in some higher leverage situations, not only succeeding but doing it consistently. And it's fun to watch those guys compete, and that's what we need to see, you know, right now. When you have guys go down, who's going to step up? And it's been nice to see some of these young internal guys do that.
Showed up pitching yesterday and started asking about the All-Star game. He doesn't want to talk about it once he's picked. But what have you seen from him, and just, you know, how he's developed?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the beginning of the year, we saw a guy who, you know, was really dominant with two pitches and you know, was coming right at hitters and really trusting what he does really well. And we knew at some point the league was going to adjust, you know, and he was ready for it. And I think, you know, the big thing for him is continuing to grow and utilize all of his repertoire, and but not forget what his strengths are and what makes him so good. That fastball up and that split down have been so dominant all year. But you've seen over the last few games the cutter start to come into play a little bit more, the slider come into play a little bit more. So he's just a lot of fun to work with because there is so much knowledge and so much experience there, but there's also a hunger and a willingness to learn, especially now being in the big leagues and the major leagues and continuing to find ways to get better. So it's been a lot of fun. He's had a great first half, and yeah, I'll just continue to look for more success, you know, as we keep rolling.
What do you make of his All-Star case?
I'm sorry?
What do you make of his All-Star case?
I mean, I think, you know, he's kind of done everything you've asked him to do in the first half of your first, you know, your rookie season. I think he went off, you know, to an excellent start at the beginning, hit a couple snags, worked through them, has proven that he can make adjustments and get back into it. And, you know, he's a big reason, you know, we've been able to sustain some stuff throughout this first half of the season. So, yeah, I think he's done a fantastic job. And obviously we'd love to have our guys representative in the All-Star game, and he's definitely a candidate for that.
How difficult has your job been with all the injuries you've had to deal with, and you had to make changes and do everything different that you expected to do?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely a rehab coordinator right now a little bit, which you don't love to do, but unfortunately injuries happen and it's part of the game. But I think the biggest thing is how to navigate those two things, navigating all these schedules and the protocols and things that get guys to return back to play. So like the Merriweather, Leiter, Adbert, you know, all these guys, how do we, because they're on completely different programs, so how do we communicate with those guys and make sure that they have the stuff that they need? And then on top of that, getting the guys we have, the new guys, continuing to put them in situations to be successful, also while still trying to develop and grow and learn in this game. That's definitely a lot of work, you know, but I have an amazing support staff with Moscos and Holmes and Garrett Lloyd and all these guys that just continue to help me in our group and our players get better. So, yeah, it's very fortunate in that sense.
What is the latest on Leiter?
So threw a bullpen yesterday, 30-pitch bullpen, kind of simulated like a warm-up sit for a minute and then pitch in like a simulated inning. He felt great yesterday. So haven't seen him yet today to see how the recovery is. I don't envision anything being, you know, alarming, you know, with him, how he feels today, and he was great. So hopefully the next step is a live BP, you know, by the end of this week, and then hopefully if that all goes well, I think we're looking at, you know, hopefully getting him back next week.
At what point does Yancey make a decision?
I think in the next day or so. I think he's still just kind of wrapping his head around all the information that he's gotten from all the different doctors and what the organization's kind of been talking to him about. So hopefully in the next couple days we'll have something formalized with him. It's just tough because it's like there's days where he feels good and feels like he can play catch, and then the next day he wakes up and it's just still kind of bugging him. So I think we're just kind of waiting for that. He should have a decision in the next few days.
Is this more months than weeks when it comes to him right now?
For him, I think he's on the longer end of the group of guys. I think when we're talking about guys coming back, he's definitely on the back end of that right now.
What's a realistic expectation as guys get healthy when they do come back? Because I think the assumption is they'll be their old self, but what do you need to manage, and what's the expectation?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is like there's a return to play and a return to performance, the way I look at it. So return to play is like I'm pitching in games, but what we need to get you to the point of where you can go contribute in the big league level and contribute in the amount of games you're going to be required to pitch. I think that's one thing that we forget, is you see guys throw a bullpen or a live BP and a guy's sitting 96 miles an hour. It's like, oh, he's back. Okay, well, that's one day. I need him to do that 4 out of 7 days in a week and not just one day. So I think the timelines, what I really look forward to is when guys get into live BPs and get into games, how's their stuff ticking? How's it feeling? You know, how are they executing pitches? And then how do they recover? I talk about the recovery aspect of it more than anything, because that's the most important thing to getting back to contributing at the major league level. So right now, when we're watching these rehab process and watching these guys pitching games in the minor leagues or in live BPs, we do it very diligently, and you pitch. Usually it's 2 days off, you pitch again, and then at some point you get enough innings and workload under your belt that you can start getting into what I call like more game-like weeks, where you're going to be up, you know, 2 out of 3 games. You might, you know, get hot one day, not pitch, and be available the next day, things like that. So it's definitely a process we get through, but a lot of the guys right now are in that kind of initial phase where it's like pitch a couple days off, pitch a couple days off, and just get some good innings under your belt.
The cerebral part of helping a player development like guys with Wisniewski, how do you keep him on that track of feeling good about himself at the same time knowing that, you know, the home run ball has really impacted him?
Yeah, I think you look at it two ways. It's very obviously result-oriented business, and you want to continue to go out there and put up good numbers and put up zeros and get punch outs. Everybody wants the best of everything, but the one thing with Wes right now, we see how good a stuff he has. He's punching out 7-8 guys in 4 innings. Like, we know it's there. It's just limiting the mistakes. And honestly, we can live with the physical mistakes. They're going to happen. You're going to, you know, not execute pitches at time and give up hits. It's more the mental ones where maybe he goes away from what his strengths are or kind of pitches to contact in a situation where he probably had a chance to go get more swing and miss. It's part of the growth, part of the development. I actually talked to Steele about this the other day, and we were talking about Wes, and he was like, I felt like I was in the same position when I first came up. It's like you kind of want to do a lot, and you forget at times what your strengths are and what makes you successful. And when you're relying on your strengths and you're executing pitches, when you're relying on your strengths, it makes it easier to execute pitches because you're doing things very consistently and you're thinking about things very consistently. Wes has got great stuff, and you see it all the time. And you know, obviously the home runs have bit him lately, but I don't want him to be afraid to throw strikes because he's given up a few homers. Like, we want to continue to be aggressive and attack the strike zone.
Yeah, but, I mean, Wisniewski has been a victim of giving up too many home runs in too many important situations, whether the Cubs are starting him or they're putting him in a high leverage situation late in the game. We've seen him miss, and when he misses, the ball gets hit a really, really long way.
Yeah, I do think that that's also something that you say about a reliever too. You know, he's being put in this position because of necessity, but his truest role, I think that is solid advice. Because of what they're working on with the hole with him. It's just ugly right now when it comes to the mistakes. The mistakes look ugly, you know.
The Cubs have a very interesting lineup today.
Go on.
Nico Hoerner is going to lead off and play second base. That's normal, right? Patrick Wisdom will bat second and play first. Bellinger will bat third and play center. Seiya will play right field and bat fourth. Ian Happ will bat fifth and play left. Christopher Morel is your DH today, batting sixth.
Dan Swanson
will bat seventh and play shortstop. David Bodie will play third base for the Cubs today. And their new catcher, Nito, is going to catch the game. Jameson Taillon is going to pitch to Tomas Nito. So that's the Cubs lineup for today. Interesting.
David Bodie at third base.
He's trying different. You got to try different stuff, right?
What year is this?
Yeah. And maybe if you'd been playing David Bodie, and I won't even get into the magic.
We
stuff.
Had a conversation about it. People mock me for that, too.
Yep.
It's okay. You mock me for everything. You hate me no matter what.
That's not true. People love Leila Rahimi.
No, but I'm saying, like, when it comes to baseball decisions and stuff we talk about, not my fault you're not ready to have a conversation.
That's right. Someone's already mad at the lineup. Texter says, the two-hole? What the bleep, Craig?
You know what? It's your right as an American to ask about the lineup.
It's a fair question, but maybe it's Savali, right? Is Savali going to? Let me look real quick. Because if it's Savali, no, it's Sanchez. So it's a lefty pitcher. So maybe it makes sense to have Wisdom going.
Bodie, rocking everywhere.
That's right.
It had to be done.
Big thanks to Alex Kuhn, who did a great job prepping today's show and running today's show. Wonderful work by you, sir.
And confessing to being a hard.
Found the air horn for that guy that didn't want it.
Oh, that's right. We could start with the recorder again. Cubs baseball on the score.